Faith leaders in Jacksonville have a message for the mayor. Cancel the RNC. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll tell you why dozens of pastors are speaking out against the Republican convention coming to town next month. What do you think? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, retired military officers on the First Coast want a word about renaming bases and ships with ties to the Confederacy. But first this hour, the latest on the pandemic in Florida. Statewide, we are at nearly 214,000 cases and nearly 4,000 deaths. In Northeast Florida, the tally stands at 13,364 COVID cases and 124 deaths. We learned this week Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry is self-quarantining after being exposed to someone who has COVID-19. The mayor says he's tested negative but is self-isolating as a precaution. And the Department of Health and Human Services has identified Jacksonville as one of three hotspots that will receive a surge of federal COVID testing. Three new testing sites are open around town today, including at the Regency Mall. Despite all of this, part of the RNC is still scheduled to take place here in August, and a group of local pastors has joined the growing chorus in speaking out against that. Right now, we welcome two of them, Pastor Dr. John Allen Newman of the Sanctuary at Mount Calvary Church. Pastor Newman, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you. Also with us, Pastor Dr. Gary L. Williams of Hopewell Church in Mandarin. Pastor Williams, good to have you on the show.
Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
And as we speak with local faith leaders about the RNC and their objections to the event, citing health concerns and a social protest, we want your calls. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, Pastor Williams, let's begin with you. You and nearly 80 other local faith leaders who have flocks in this community have signed on to this letter asking the mayor to cancel the RNC in Jacksonville. Why speak out now? What motivated this group of you to come together in this manner?
Well, it's the, Melissa, it's the growing number of COVID cases. And one of the things that I said in one of the previous interviews that I did is that it's really just a practical and prudent thing to do. If I am sick and I want to have a dinner party, I will not invite you to my home if I have the flu if I'm sick. If you are sick, I will not invite you to my home for a dinner party or cookout if you are sick. If we both are sick, I will not invite you to my home to have a dinner party. And so it is, I think it's just a practical, it is the prudent thing to do, is that our city is sick every single day, and not every week, the numbers are spiking every single day. And so I believe it's just a prudent thing to do.
Pastor Newman, yesterday the president says he's flexible when he was asked if spiking COVID cases in Florida could affect his wish for a big nominating convention next month in Jacksonville at our Veterans Memorial Arena. What about that? And what about what we're hearing from the governor, that the event could only be held at 50% capacity? Would those types of restrictions be enough to allay your concerns or not?
As long as the restrictions abide by the CDC guidelines of social distancing and making sure that people are wearing masks. Remember, the health paradigm is that we're going by is what would give me the comfort for the safety of the citizens of Jacksonville. To hear that he's flexible is at least to some degree encouraging, irrespective of what has been said in the past. For obviously, the very reason why they're not in Charlotte is because they could not be guaranteed to be able to not go by the CDC protocols, and so therefore they look for another venue. So I would certainly hope that they would keep in mind the safety of the people, because that's exactly what this is about. Let me also say, if the Democratic National Convention wanted to come here under these conditions, we would have written the same letter. It's not partisan.
You don't see this as, Dr. Williams, what would you say to those looking at the letter who feel that it's a partisan position to take? What would be your answer to that?
Well, my answer to that is, politics and that partisan element is just in our element, it's just in our environment. But I want to go back to what Pastor Newman said. One of the things that I have done and many of our churches have done virtually, we've been worshiping virtually for 14 straight weeks. Our congregation is in excess of 3,000 people. We have two campuses. We've reduced our services to just one service. We stream it live. We limit it to about 25 people. Everybody's doing social distancing, and that's it. I have over 50 people on staff. About five or six of them are staggering in, throughout the week. So, I think it's disingenuous for me to say, or anyone to say, okay, it's for the Republican National Convention, it's for the Democratic National Convention, et cetera, et cetera. I don't care if it's a church convention, Kiwanis Club, Lynx, fraternity, sorority, and I agree along with my colleague. If it has to be happening, then let's go along with the CDC guidelines. But if we can err on the side of caution because we're becoming the epicenter of this virus, and let me just say this, roughly two months ago, when people who came from New York or Jersey or somewhere in those tri-states of Connecticut, et cetera, we quarantined them upon coming here. Now they've returned the favor. And that's not a surprise. It's because the numbers are increasing. So that's what I would say.
We're speaking with two local faith leaders. They've joined nearly 80 local clergy members, urging Jacksonville and Mayor Curry to reconsider hosting the Republican National Convention at the end of August at Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena. They followed on the heels of hundreds of physicians sending the same message to local and statewide officials. What do you think about this? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Dr. Newman, any response from City Hall to your letter?
Not that I know of in terms of any specific correspondence, but that they are in receipt of it from.
And so as you're waiting a response, it's interesting to look through the letter because not only do you talk about health concerns, you cite fears that ethnic tension and economic uncertainty in Jacksonville have amplified the level of anxiety in our society, and that it's offensive to hold the convention on the 60th anniversary of Axe Handle Saturday in Jacksonville during the height of the civil rights movement. A peaceful protest to integrate lunch counters was met by a white mob wielding baseball bats and axe handles. And so there are a number of reasons that you get into in this letter. It's not just the health concerns, correct?
That is correct. When you think of, unfortunately, the language that has come out of the White House, particularly as it relates to the president's inability to condemn the Confederate flag that was connected to the NASCAR incident specifically, but in general. And then for him to be accepting on the background of that, the nomination of his party on the date of the worst racial incident in the history of Jacksonville, Florida, where people were peacefully protesting and people with baseball bats, axe handles, golf clubs, and other sticks literally attacked them, beat them, ran them all the way out of downtown into neighborhoods. That is an insult to the entire community to be that insensitive on that anniversary, to not take that into account, particularly when the President of the United States, sadly, can't even condemn the Confederate flag for being the heinous representation of racism that it is.
I want to ask you as a follow-up, Pastor Newman, you are the lead pastor at your church in Jacksonville, Sanctuary at Mount Calvary. Your wife, Omarosa Manigault Newman, used to work for President Trump and has since written a book highly critical of his administration. How much has that affected your view of this administration, if at all?
No.
It hasn't? So how did you feel about the president before?
If you remember James Carville and Mary Madeline being on different sides of the fence as it relates to their politics, that's kind of how our household was. Very respectful, of the difference of our opinion. Of course, I supported her in the sense of I knew that she was at the table. And because she was at the table, there were people who could get to the table, perhaps could not. So there was much value in her position there. But in terms of our home, no, there was no, there's no division there whatsoever. And it had no impact on my feeling about the president or that campaign, because I'm a lifelong Democrat. And so she knew that when I when we were meeting, got married, and I knew that she was with the presidential campaign, particularly since they go back to 2003, and a lot of it was out of a personal relationship. No, it had no impact at all.
And certainly lots of marriages are like that. And, it, you know, Pastor Williams, this is a time in American society when we're not just divided in our homes, we're divided in our public spaces. And Jacksonville, as you point out in the letter, has been divided. That said, a recent UNF poll showed a bipartisan majority in Jacksonville opposes this event coming to town. Over all concerns, they're worried that this could become a super spreader of COVID-19, even if social distancing and mask wearing and a reduced capacity inside the arena are part of what goes on. We have heard from the host committee that everyone going in and out of the convention hall will be temperature checked and tested for COVID, although we have not been able to get more details on how that's going to be done and who's going to pay for that. And so your letter is the latest sort of brick in the wall, placing pressure on local officials and the RNC to reconsider this event. Do you feel that it's having an impact, or since you haven't heard a response yet from officials on this, do you think it's not going to make a difference?
Well, I pray it is, and I think that it's essential that our voices be heard. Many of us are speaking on behalf of people who have no voice, who would not have this audience. So I think it is essential for us to be faith leaders to speak to that. And then let me add this. I mean, when you have a society that's already on edge, that's already sick, we are juggling multiple issues. And then here's the other thing. The RNC will leave. You know, the convention will leave. We will be here. And so if we're already struggling, if we're already battling, every single morning, Lot J is wrapped around the block. Every single morning, they have more people than they can test. I mean, it to me is just common sense. It's not rocket science. I mean, it's just a prudent and practical and decent thing to do.
It's 549-2937, and lots of tweets coming into the show. Comments on Facebook. Josh writes, "What level of viral infection would it take for the mayor to consider canceling?" Mark tweets us, "Inviting the RNC here was profoundly flawed. Aside from the politics, it was utterly irresponsible. No one asked us what we thought. So glad people are speaking out. Tell Curry we don't want the RNC," he says. And weighing in on Facebook, Gary writes, "If they aren't comfortable, just stay away and advise their congregation to do the same." What about that? That if you're not happy with it, just stay away from the convention space.
Oh, is that for me?
Yeah, Pastor Newman.
Well, I mean, I understand why a person would say that. I mean, that's kind of an easy thing to say. But when you think that we have to be utilitarian, I've been warned not to use big words this morning, but that's a private joke. But we have to be utilitarian. We've got to do what is in best interest of the greatest good for the greatest number and the common good. It's not just a matter of us looking out for ourselves. This is actually a concern for the entire citizenry of Jacksonville. As my colleague has so eloquently said, with the disease spiking in this area, and sadly, with the lack and underreporting from the state, as ordered by the state, not to actually give out all of the data as to how many people are sick and the ICU beds are being used up and all of that data information being lost, we really don't know how bad this virus really is. And with that kind of obfuscation and clouding the issue, it's hard for people to feel safe in that environment. I think that just saying, well, don't go, that's really not an answer, because somebody who will risk their lives and the life of their family. And it just isn't worth the risk. Now, if a person decides to do that on their own, that's fine. If you know, it's not going to hurt anybody else. But the possibility of hurting their own family is a real risk, and it's just not one worth taking, considering how virulent and how dangerous this virus is.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with Pastor Dr. John Allen Newman of the Sanctuary at Mount Calvary Church, Pastor Dr. Gary Williams of Hopewell Church in Mandarin, joining nearly 80 clergy sending a letter to Mayor Lenny Curry, pleading with him to cancel the Republican convention in Jacksonville. And, you know, Pastor Williams, it is true that ICU beds are filling up, not just around Florida, but here in Jacksonville, where the event will be held. The testing, as Pastor Newman said, the lines are wrapped around Lot J every day. Three new federal testing sites are opening today around town to accommodate for the increased demand. We are hearing from people who've gotten tests that it takes a very long time to get their results back. So as public health officials try to manage this, there is a lot of anxiety in this community about COVID. Now, that said, I want to get your reaction to a comment from the mayor about the RNC. He said it's still several weeks off and that things could be different by the time we get to late August, and that it's premature to call for cancellations before we know where we are in late August. What's your reaction to that?
Well, Melissa, that's Pollyanna. Think about this. I think on an average, it takes 2 years to prepare to host a convention. Just think about that for a moment. What, you know, all of the logistics, all of the work, it takes on an average of 2 years to host a convention. We're doing this a little short or a little over 2 months, coupled with the fact that we're in the midst of a pandemic, coupled with the fact that now Florida is becoming the epicenter, coupled with the fact that Lot J and so many other testing sites are maxed at capacity, coupled with the fact that the schools are about to open. And so, I mean...
Yeah, let me get your reaction to that. The Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran yesterday reacting, it seemingly off a tweet from the president, saying schools need to be open in the fall and saying that all Florida schools need to be open 5 days a week in August, even though parents and teachers are worried about COVID-19. What about that piece of what's happening here in Florida right now?
Well, it goes along with the narrative of what we're already saying. And I think that we have to be reasonable. We have to be practical. We have to be sensible. And I think we have to be decent. I believe decency is the low-hanging fruit of humanity.
All right, so
if we're not concerned about the lives of people, if we place profit ahead of people, then that we are putting this whole community, our entire municipality, in peril, in danger.
Let's go to some calls now. Michael in Jacksonville. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hey, Melissa. First-time caller. My comment is regarding the convention. I believe it was Pastor Newman who mentioned earlier that they have, due to COVID-19, they've been holding their services through virtual services. I'm wondering why the RNC won't consider doing that, being that, you know, point safety would be top priority, would be conquered, and then, you know, people who wouldn't even have attended it in person might even attend it online. So the viewership might even go up as a benefit to the RNC. That's just my point.
Right.
I'll take it off air.
Thanks, Michael. You know, Pastor Newman, the whole reason we're getting this event is because the president didn't want that kind of convention, which is what the Democrats are going to be doing in Milwaukee. The president pulled out of North Carolina and came to Jacksonville because the governor up there, who is a Democrat, said, no, you've got to basically do this virtually in order to be safe. And the president wants a big packed arena the night of his renomination, which is the whole reason we're having this conversation.
Well, that really speaks to the sadness of the situation, actually, because, again, had North Carolina allowed him to do what he wanted to do, we wouldn't be thinking about or talking about Jacksonville. What this really means in plain words is that the RNC and the president, because of his desire for a live audience, is willing to put people's lives at risk. That is just the reality. If you were to get his own, you know, disease fighting team, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx, if you were to actually get them in a one-off conversation, they would probably tell you it's a crazy idea to come under these conditions of Jacksonville. To have people together.
Do you know that for a fact? Have you heard that for a fact? Just curious.
Well, what I,
given some of your connections.
What I have heard is that they have to be very careful in the language they use because they don't want to get into an open fight with the President of the United States. I can understand that because they want to do their job to protect the people. But at the same time, Dr. Fauci is very clear that we are in not a second phase. We're in a second portion of the first phase. And let me also just say this very quickly, parenthetically. Just as an economic indicator, the last indicator as to the health of an economy is people returning back to work. The lagging indicator as the depth of this disease with this virus is how many people have died. So when people say, well, deaths are down, you cannot really actually use that table right now because it's too soon. It takes a little while to find out how many people actually are dying from this disease. So it's really a false narrative to say that, well, because the cases are up, but the level of deaths are down. The truth of the matter is that indicator cannot be indicated at this time because it's just too soon.
Susan in Mandarin Heights. Susan, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a comment when you were talking about the having the Republican Party here that they that response.
If you could turn your radio down, Susan, that would be good.
Okay. The response was, could you just not go? And the idea, that deflects the question. Mm-hmm. It puts it on something totally different because our low-income workers have to go. They have to feed their family. They have
Great
to
point.
Go and
go.
Not putting them at risk. I just feel so strongly that we've missed our national priority in saying that it's just individual. We're missing the big picture when it's all of us. We are all in the same boat. I watched the WJCT effort last night on women, and it was so powerful because it took so long for women to be understood as equal to men. It took, you know, yeah,
some might say that understanding hasn't made it all the way yet. Susan, I get your point completely.
Now I understand these women that put their lives on the line so that I could vote. I just never understood how hard that was.
Oh yes.
And it just put the whole racial situation in such clarity because they could not admit that equality. The women couldn't because it would have disenfranchised. But they did get that amendment says all women.
Thanks,
and
Susan.
They got that
yeah.
Because
and I appreciate your thoughts because you're touching on something that's a little bit tangential to today, but not really, because Dr. Williams, the social justice protests we've seen in Jacksonville in the wake of the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis are about systemic racism and police brutality. But at the same time, the protesters are calling for equality for everyone and greater empathy for people who are vulnerable or marginalized in this society. And so that gets back to her original point, which is that COVID-19 is putting workers at risk, whether they have to work the Republican convention or whether they're delivering your DoorDash food at night or working at a grocery store, whatever it is. If you're a marginalized person or, not able to work remotely, if you're not privileged enough to be able to do that, you are being exposed more aggressively to this virus, right?
Absolutely. And what happens is that the language does not help. You know, when you speak about people in marginalized terms, then you can dehumanize them. And that's where you see your situations like your George Floyd in the fact that people of color, and you know, people say Black Lives Matter. They've been saying that for years. And the challenge is that every so often, and we're going to continue to come up with this. We're going to continue to be faced with these protests, et cetera, et cetera, because America has never purely and in an unadulterated form dealt with race. It's not until you really, when you look back in history and when you see how history has affected certain people, then that's when I believe people begin to understand the gravity of the effects of systemic racism, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been in it's been in every system of society. It's been in every system of life, religious system, social system, business system, political system, government system. And so what happens is that it morphs and it evolves and it becomes a little more clandestine, but it is as potent as it was 100 years ago. And so that's why every so often when people have had enough, they cope with it for a while. People of color, they cope with it for a season. And then when they get to a point where it just comes to a head, this is what transpires. And let me say this. I think it's essential. One of the things that we see in society is that we see society reacting to a lot of things. Well, sometimes reactionary responses are not sustainable. You know, we see monuments coming down. We see, you know, I heard the other day, well, somebody said, well, we're, you know, let's do the Negro National Anthem at the NFL. We need an anthem for everyone. But you can't do. One of the things that we often do is that psychologically and subliminally, we pit one side against another. And so it's not until you begin to have those serious dialogues on racism, you know, that's when I believe that we'll begin to make inroads in our society and begin to, that's when the healing can take place, because healing can't take place void of dealing with hurt, first of all.
And lots more comments on this topic as we speak with two of the nearly 80 pastors who've asked the mayor to cancel the RNC. Nancy on our Facebook page writes, this and the DNC are both totally unnecessary. Just announce virtually, as the DNC will do, that Trump will be the candidate and be done with it. Why risk everyone's health, she says. Madeline tweets the show, please point out key Republicans are pulling out of the convention. That's true. Several senators like Susan Collins, Lamar Alexander, others have said they won't attend in Jacksonville. And she says, huge thanks to the pastors for talking about decency. All right, let's go to Nick on the West Side. Hi, Nick. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment on the RNC. I feel like it's politicking, and I don't understand why so often of late that politics seems to take precedent over public health. It feels like we've really pushed American selfishness to the forefront, where only I matter and nobody else, his health is important. And I just don't understand, like, the just don't go comment does not keep the spread from happening after the RNC in your community. If I don't show up at the RNC, doesn't mean that somebody doesn't show up to my work that was there that causes spread. The show up doesn't stop community spread. I mean, it's just selfish reaction. And I really don't understand how we've become so callous as a society. I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
Nick. Pastor Newman, you know, it has been fascinating to watch Mayor Curry, a politician and former head of the state Republican Party, balance the political imperatives with the need to lead on public health here in the city of Jacksonville. Now, to his credit, he did early on set up testing sites, encourage mask wearing, social distancing. He did institute a mask order for the city of Jax, which could throw a major kink into the works for the RNC here. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, let's just look at it honestly. I mean, the mayor and one thing that he's in quarantine, so we wish him and his family the best. But let's just be very clear in terms of just the politics of it. He's in a very, very tough place. As you already mentioned, he was the chair of the Republican Party for the state. You do know that Adam Putnam was a very strong candidate until Donald Trump endorsed Ron DeSantis. And then...
For governor,
exactly. And so DeSantis becomes governor. Now, obviously, the governor owes his political survival to the president. So the president gets in touch with Ron DeSantis, and then Ron DeSantis gets in touch with a former state chair who is mayor of Jacksonville. So I think, you know, connecting those dots is not difficult. So, I mean, the mayor was in a very tough spot. I mean, that's just the reality of it. But what, no pun intended, trumps all of that is the primary responsibility of the mayor, the governor, and even the president. The first order is to protect and keep safe the citizens under your charge. And so while, you know, we applaud the behavior for the masks and the social distancing and so forth and so on, we also realize that this convention coming here is, it kind of belies all of the previous good moves that were made, because it basically says that, well, we're going to have it anyway. Even though, you know, they don't want social distancing and they don't want mask wearing to be mandatory. And I don't know how you square this circle when we've already made it mandatory now. And I've understood from what recently was put out there that we're going to be still under the order from the governor when the convention comes. So it's really a tough situation. And I'm not surprised Republicans are saying, I'm not going. And I think that might be a tipping point. That might be the beginning of a trend of others who are not going to come. And then the question has to be raised, Melissa, what about all this money that was supposed to be an economic boom for the city? What happens there? Because right now they're talking about the numbers are not going to be nearly what they expected it to be. So I think it's just a really tough place to be.
So let's close with you then, Pastor Williams. Beyond issuing this public letter, do you plan any other moves to try to move the needle, persuade officials on this issue?
Well, we're actually talking today, so I don't want to go any further on that. All right.
But we'll stay tuned, in other words. And I want to thank you both for appearing with us, Pastor Dr. Gary L. Williams of Hopewell Church in Mandarin and Pastor Dr. John Allen Newman of the Sanctuary at Mount Calvary Church, leading on this coalition of nearly 80 pastors who've issued a public letter about the RNC in Jacksonville. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, much more still ahead later. It's our What's Good Wednesdays. Some shout-outs and some positive news for you in this time of pandemic and recession. And up next, military officers in our area have some thoughts about the renaming of bases and ships. We'll be right back.
Blues Horizon has a new gig. We've packed up our instruments and moved over to WJCT 89.9 HD3. The best in classic and modern blues has a new home. Tune in as we explore the vault and find unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, as part of the Jacksonville Music Experience. Every Sunday night at 8 on WJCT 89.9 HD3.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Who is someone who most shaped your worldview? This summer, WJCT Public Media is asking Northeast Florida residents to tackle that question and others with someone who is different from them. It's part of One Small Step, a project with StoryCorps. We're pairing strangers who hold different views for a conversation. Sign up at wjct.org/OSS.
StoryCorps' One Small Step is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Electro Lounge can now be heard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on WJCT 89.9 HD4 Electro Lounge Radio or on the WJCT app. Electro Lounge Radio, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Welcome back. Well, the push to take down monuments around the country tied to the Confederacy has also extended to renaming military installations like Fort Benning, Fort Stewart in our area, and many others around the country. And there's even discussion of renaming aircraft carriers. Retired Navy officer Reuben Keith Green lives here in Jacksonville, and he's been writing about one name in particular, the USS Stennis. I spoke with him. Take a listen. Reuben Keith Green, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
You're like a lot of folks around this area. You're retired military, retired Navy. And as we've been learning, the Armed Forces is going to be changing the names of military installations across the country to take off any names of figures from the past that had ties to the Confederacy. That includes other military fixtures, too, like aircraft carriers. This is something that the Navy's watching closely, including you. Tell us about the carrier Stennis and why there's a push to change that name.
Great, I'll do that. But first, the Army has made no decision about changing the names of the bases named after the Confederacy because of the actions of President Trump, but that's under consideration. But regarding the Stennis, I was concerned, I've always been concerned since it was announced in 1988 that the aircraft carrier was going to be named after a lifelong segregationist and white supremacist from Mississippi. So I wrote an article for the Proceedings magazine detailing the reasons I thought that that name should be removed in light of the current awakening of the American public regarding symbols of the Confederacy.
It's not really common to change the name of a ship in the active duty fleet, but you've been making a compelling argument that the Navy should do that, and they're listening, right?
Well, I believe they're listening. The article has been forwarded to Congress as part of a package from the Navy regarding the changing of ships' names. Stennis's prior home port, they talked about in a news article, TV news article about, you know, how that would impact or was impacting a diverse crew. The Norfolk home port of Stennis, they had a professor from ODU on the news talking about how hurtful that was to minority sailors. And also employees at the Stennis Space Center and NASA Space Center, after reading my article, started a petition to rename the ship. So there's widespread agreement with what I wrote, and I do believe that the Navy's listening.
You've proposed that the USS John Stennis be renamed the USS William S. Norman. That was a black Navy officer, the 19th chief of naval operations, an advocate for racial equality in the ranks. Can you talk about why this is such a particularly important discussion to be having in the military, which was one of the first major institutions in America to integrate?
Well, it's because the military has long held itself up as a leader in the field of integration, and that's true. But in the era of inclusion, there has always been problems. The longer you stay in the military, the higher you go up, the wider that that atmosphere gets. And during the Vietnam War, there was widespread conflict both on ships and on military bases, and a lot of it had to do with racism and discrimination. The military banned the Confederate flag in Vietnam after widespread rioting and fighting between black and white soldiers. And it was individuals like John C. Stennis who intervened and had them remove the ban of the Confederate flag. Bill Norman was Zumwalt's minority affairs assistant, and he is the individual that is singularly responsible for the changes that took place in the Navy. He was the author of Zumwalt's Z-Gram number 66, Equal Opportunity in the Navy, and he fought mightily against people that tried to water it down. But he had experienced so much discrimination in his career that he had submitted a resignation letter. And Zumwalt asked him to stay on and help him change the Navy, and that's what Norman did. I think he's probably the most important black officer that's ever served in the Navy.
Hmm. And here in Jacksonville, with our strong Navy presence, what are you hearing from active duty and retired military about all this stuff?
Well, I'm not hearing much from individuals locally, but I did have a retired Navy veteran from Vermont track me down through one of his former employees. He started a company called The Parts House. He happened to be Jewish, and he tracked me down, and he gave me a call, and he explained to me that this battle has been going on for a long time. He talked about the anti-Semitism and discrimination he experienced in the 50s in Green Cove Springs. and how bad it was for him, but it was even worse for the minority stewards, blacks and Filipinos, that that had to deal with the discrimination in the military. I haven't heard much from the local community. I'm not really tied into what goes on in the military locally, but I have been getting lots of positive comments regarding the article, and it's been viewed over 11,000 times, and it's been just a little over a week on my LinkedIn account.
We'll continue to follow it, and thank you for sharing this with us. He's Reuben Keith Green, a retired black lieutenant commander in the Navy, now retired here in Jacksonville. Always good to talk to you, and thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it.
And we've got some midsummer musings for you right now. It's our regular midweek look at positive things going on in our community, even though we're dealing with a pandemic and a recession. Now, we've been keeping an eye out for virtual summer camps for kids to tell you about, and we came across a really good one. It's free, by the way. Communities and Schools of Jacksonville is partnering up with Shiva Robotics Academy. And they're offering 1 week of virtual youth STEAM camp to kids in grades 3 through 8. This program is free, and if you have a kid in those grades attending a Duval County Public School, they're eligible to go. If you enroll your child, they'll learn 3D designing, animation, simulated robotics, and game designing, all from the comfort of their home. Camp starts July 20th, so be sure to enroll by July 15th. That's coming up soon. Again, it's Shiva Robotics Academy, and it's Virtual Youth STEAM Camp. That's STEAM, you know, science, technology, art, engineering, math. All right. Here's another good one. Megan Weigel, a multiple sclerosis nurse practitioner at First Coast Integrative Medicine, is one of 10 recipients of the International Organization of MS Nurses 2020 Nightingale Award. This award honors Weigel and her peers as part of the International Year of the Nurse and Midwife. That was designated by the World Health Organization to commemorate the 200th anniversary of Florence Nightingale's birth. Weigel has developed a program that helps MS patients feel empowered. They'll explore yoga, art therapy, meditation, music therapy, nutrition, sound therapy, and more. All right, here's my favorite of the day. We are grizzled newsroom veterans here on the show, so of course we love coffee. We mainline coffee. We love the whiff of that sweet, sweet aroma of Joe being brewed up down the street from us at Maxwell House. So we're happy to hear that their company is planning to spruce up the iconic sign at the Bay Street plant. They hope to restart the Maxwell House sequenced coffee drips that come from the sign's cup and to incorporate seasonal colors into the sign. To make it more festive, the Downtown Development Board is going to review this whole idea later this week. What goes best with a cup of coffee? Another cup, said Henry Rollins. And in a moment, something else good, how the Alhambra is still doing live onstage theater safely, even in a time of pandemic. That's after this.
Congaree and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congareeandpenn.com for more information.
Celebrating 45 years supporting youth in urgent need, the Youth Crisis Center now is building House of Hope, safe housing for LGBTQ youth needing physical, emotional, and mental health care in the growing local homeless community. More at youthcrisiscenter.org.
Major League Soccer is the latest sport attempting to come back in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. The league is facing a potentially catastrophic hit to its finances.
And if you don't have those sponsorship dollars, I don't know how realistically these teams survive, how this league survives, how these players survive.
The challenges of restarting MLS this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Sarah Posner about her new book, Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump. She's a journalist who covers the intersection of religion and politics. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
George Soros. Ostracized by his own country, this Hungarian-American billionaire is a divisive figure in global politics. And for decades, he's been at the center of endless fake stories and conspiracy theories. I'm Jen White. What influence does he have? And why are so many fixated on George Soros? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the pandemic has shuttered Broadway through the end of the year, at least, and big regional theaters and outdoor festivals have mostly started streaming. But many theaters are finding ways to entertain audiences. Live performances before live audiences. Yeah. And here in town, the Alhambra Dinner Theater is doing that. They are continuing to stage Cinderella with some changes. Alhambra owner Craig Smith is on the line with more. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good, and it's good to hear your voice. Also good to see that you were featured in a recent article in the New York Times about this. So how is the Alhambra putting on Cinderella while still keeping everybody safe?
When you and I started our journeys together 11 years ago, did I ever think we would make the New York Times?
I know, right? Because that's about how long you've been running the theater. Yeah, when we first launched this show was when you first started the theater.
I was your second guest.
That's right.
Wayne, if I remember, Wayne Weaver was your first guest. I was second.
Absolutely right. I'll never forget it. Yeah, so
me
you,
either,
what a journey. What a journey.
Wonderful. It has been, and of course, it's been a rough one as of late. But we have reopened and doing everything that all the different agencies tell us to do and suggest we do. And so far, we've had great response. And I tell people every night, I know there's a bunch of empty tables, but we're completely sold out.
Really? That is really exciting to hear. Now, from what I read in the Times, you have plexiglass between seating. You've got people wearing masks, except when they're eating. Performers are even wearing gloves, and you've staggered the seating. Now, this is the best part of the detail. Cinderella and Prince Charming share an elbow bump instead of a kiss on stage, so that's kind of interesting.
Exactly.
Too.
And that gets a big laugh every night. We have obviously staged the show in a way to keep the performers as far away as possible. I'm not sure where the glove thing came from in the New York Times, but they're not actually wearing gloves, the performers themselves, unless their costumes dictate. I think they saw some pictures with gloves.
But, I see.
But we've certainly got them bundled up as tight as we can and get the staff bundled up. We're changing gloves between every interaction with every guest. If you want to find a stock, find a latex glove company stock, because it's a good one.
Heck yeah. But what's interesting, too, is at the Alhambra, even in this difficult time, you figured out a way to keep going. And it's exciting to hear that a business like yours is selling out every night. I think people are hungry for that kind of live cultural experience, aren't they?
It is, Melissa. And of course, we're selling out at 160 guests, you know, based on social distancing is what we're doing. And we've looked at a lot of options to be able to go outside or do other things. And so, of course, obviously not the summer, but based on how long this thing lasts and where we go, we'll have even some better ideas maybe coming in the winter.
Hmm. But in the meantime, you do encourage people to get their tickets for Cinderella. How much longer is the show running?
The show runs till July 20th. But, Melissa, I'm proud to tell you we're doing Cinderella and then Grease, and we don't have any tickets to sell for either show. We had pre-sold the shows, obviously, very well. And so they had both met there based on social distancing, all that we can get in the building. We've actually added three additional weeks for Greece to be able to meet all the commitments we had for people who bought tickets. So we're excited about that. Love, Sex, and the IRS, Footloose, and Christmas are the three shows we still have some tickets available for.
So go online, alhambrajacks.com. Get your tickets now. Live theater is still happening in the city. The Alhambra is the longest-running dinner theater in America. They have a great chef, Chef Dewan Roy, a great owner, Craig Smith, and Actors Equity performers, although you've adjusted that, too, because of the pandemic.
For this show and the next show, we are not an equity house, much to our chagrin. They just wasn't in a position yet to say, hey, we're ready to go back to work. And you know, as I share with them, we have 91 people in that building, a lot of single moms and newborn dads with newborns that had to get back to work. So we've done all that we can do and keeping everybody safe. And so this show and the next show will be a non-equity show.
Thank you so much, Craig, for being with us. And again, it's alhambrajacks.com to check out theater in Jacksonville. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Melissa. Bye-bye.
And be mindful, there will be a number of safety precautions if you do go. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is station news director. And our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. And if you missed any portion of today's show, check out our podcast online, wherever you get your podcasts, or catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day and keep wearing your masks.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.